Welcome, fans. My name is Sam, and in this episode, we are going to share some special content from our Patreon page. Over at patreon.com/JLUpodcast, you can find some bonus content, movie reviews, thoughts about things DC-related, also some things, posts that are not DC-related, just kind of a grab bag of various things over on Patreon, and that's where we've been doing a lot of our activity the last couple months. And we wanted to share one thing from there, which is this conversation with Mark and Nathan about the DC Universe show Doom Patrol. So that will be coming up in just a moment. And soon on the public feed here, we will be returning to some Justice League analysis and some more Aquaman content. But in the meantime, enjoy this conversation about Doom Patrol. Welcome, fans of DC Universe. My name is Sam, and today I am joined by two people who you might recognize from their DCEU Minute by Minute podcast. That's the DC Cinematic Minute. But they also happen to be two of the biggest fans of Doom Patrol that I know of. They host Doom Patrol Radio, which is a podcast that discusses each episode of Doom Patrol in detail. Guys, thanks so much for being here, and I will let you go ahead and introduce yourselves.
Hello, my name is Mark. You can find me on all social media at Mark Meadows.
And my name is Nathan. You can also find me on all social media at No Clutch Nate.
And we are the hosts of Doom Patrol Radio.
All right, awesome. Thanks for being here, guys. You have been gracious enough to have several of the Justice League Universe contributors guesting on your show, and so it's about time that we return the favor, and I think this is the best topic that we could have for you guys, which is Doom Patrol.
Mm-hmm.
My love of Doom Patrol is pretty recent. This show has really helped me fall in love with Doom Patrol. I have just really adored the show, as we'll talk about in this episode. But in terms of the comic books, I knew of the Doom Patrol. Like, I had heard the kind of legend of Grant Morrison's run on it, and I had read articles about how the origin of Doom Patrol was actually, like, just before X-Men, and how they were kind of competing. Both had guys in wheelchairs and stuff, mm-hmm. People with weird powers.
Mm-hmm.
So I, like, was aware of it, but the only thing I actually read was the Rebirth Doom Patrol just, like, a couple years ago. You guys, I know, have more of an in-depth history with the Doom Patrol characters, so I was wondering if you could just tell us a little bit about when you came across the comic books and how you felt about those comic books before you even knew that a show would exist.
Yeah, there was a time where I was slanging away at a comic book store and, just picking up random things. But before all that, it was when I first got introduced to Grant Morrison. Mm. And like many Grant Morrison fans, I started on Batman. And that just kind of fleshed out my understanding of him as a writer and just as a creative mind. And everything. And when I started working at the shop, I was just trying to find as many just, you know, random Grant Morrison books and yada, yada, yada.
Mm-hmm.
And I would always see the Doom Patrol cover, or at least just the binding on the shelf, and just kind of go past or whatever. But one day I just picked it up and, like, I mean, it was Alice in Wonderland falling into the hole, man.
Hmm.
It just snowballed from there.
So that was like right from volume one of Grant Morrison's run?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
But it was, I mean, it was, you know, 20 years after the fact when I was discovering it and everything. But then that, I started picking it up probably, I want to say maybe 3 years before the Rebirth title came out, okay. The Gerard Way one. And because at that time when I was talking about Doom Patrol, it was, you know, in the same boat as everybody was 3 years ago or something, when no one really paid attention to it.
We were just starting Man of Steel Minute, our first ever podcast about anything DC related or just podcasting in general on a serious level. And I think we were starting with Man of Steel Minute, and I think we were thinking of what to do for Patreon content or some sort of bonus content that people could listen to that wasn't about talking about Man of Steel. And we were like, oh, maybe we should review comic books.
Mm-hmm.
And Nate kept saying, you should read this Doom Patrol book.
Oh,
you should read this Doom Patrol book. And so he gave it to me, and it was book one of Grant Morrison's Doom Patrol. And it comes with, like, we talk about it all the time, but it comes with a foreword from Grant Morrison and also the editor of the book. And immediately I was like, it hit me just as much as it hit him, where it was like, this is greatness, because
this is a comic book, guys.
Yeah, it's a comic book, but it's also like so full of sadness, mm-hmm. and something that you wouldn't think you would relate to, but you end up relating more than you want to. And it's that kind of vulnerability that becomes a reoccurring theme in Doom Patrol, mm-hmm. that you connect with it so quickly.
Yeah, it was something like especially Morrison's run, it removed the goggles of escapism, in my opinion, for just comics in general. Because, I mean, I could go instantly on a Wednesday, pick up the new Superman book, read it, feel great about myself, and then turn the corner and pick up a Doom Patrol and be like, oh, yeah, no, this is where I'm supposed to be hanging out, guys. It was just darkness and sad, and that was the kind of thing that it wasn't like, I wasn't like trying to, you know, conjure up my inner Marilyn Manson or anything like that, but it was something so far different than the regular DC titles that were just flying off the shelves, where I was so drawn to the brokenness of it, the darkness, the remorse of all the characters, but also their uplifting characteristics within themselves and as a team, that it was it was that felt like a real cohesive team up book, as opposed to, you know, Justice League.
And then if none of that works, at least there's an acid trip type adventure going on that, you know, someone is going to enjoy and be like, whoa, talking scissors, what?
Yeah.
So.
So, and I heard you guys, when you were talking in your podcast about how they drew a lot of things from the Morrison run on it. A lot of the characters are the team from Morrison's there. And then some of the villains are kind of inspired by Morrison stuff. So I am kind of curious to go, and in the DC Universe app, I can do that now to go back and read those. But it also seems like there's a lot more stuff in the Morrison run that could come up if we get like future seasons of Doom Patrol, right? Like you just kind of referenced the Scissor Men. Like there's still quite a bit that could come in the future.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I feel like as much content as they delivered in the show in the first season, there is still so much that they could bring into, especially from Morrison's run. Not to mention the what was it, 2009 run that you just...
I just discovered the 2009... It was before the New 52, and it was a 2009 run of Doom Patrol. And it's on the DC Universe app as well. So I just started reading that one.
Oh, is that like that... Keith Giffen or something?
Yeah. But then, like, there was, I mean, there's always so much source material from it where it's just, honestly, the franchise itself as Doom Patrol or whatever you want to call it, the property itself is just a goldmine of content, especially for something that's prime for this DC streaming service that they have. I mean, it's just as wacky. It's not something that you would see on like a CW show or anything like that. It just feels, it feels like, it just feels perfect for it.
I don't think the CW would have like a herd of butts coming and flying like at the camera.
Not at all. Not at all.
And one of the things that the show did so well that, you know, like if you talk to, I guess we're an example of it, but if you talk to someone who just reads the Doom Patrol comic books and they're like, and as the show was going on, it was things like, oh, well, are they ever going to touch on like the Scissor Men or the Fifth Horseman or like this, the painting that stole Paris? What the show did so well is that it didn't just say we have to reference those things now and do it the way that they did in the book. What they did in the show so well is that when they introduced those references from the books, they did it in a way that they were using the resources that they already had in the show so that it felt cohesive. So when you do see the Fifth Horseman in the show, it's Ezekiel the roach that you saw in the beginning. I'm probably spoiling things, but it's a roach. It's a talking roach. It's, I don't know. It's that kind of thing where it's like they do it in such a, as far as writing goes for a season of a show, they do it so well and kind of, I guess, close to the chest in a way.
It's really mind-blowing, the... like trying to figure out the type of roads that the writers took for, I mean, just looking at, now that we can see it as a whole, the season as itself, the way that the writers formed it out with pulling from the source material, but also making it their own. It's something phenomenal.
It's like an acrobatic.
It really is.
And like it was such a, they did so much heavy lifting to make it all come together. And it seems flawless, but people have to know that that is not easy whatsoever when it comes to writing.
Yeah, and we're going to get to talk about that in a bit. And I've also already kind of given away that we're big fans of the show. you and I and all of us kind of have a lot of love for the show. But before we get into the show, I wanted to ask you about starting yet another podcast and doing it about Doom Patrol before you knew if the show was actually going to be good. And also just, you know, taking on another, you know, podcasting challenge. So, like, what was it like when you decided to actually start up the Doom Patrol radio podcast?
So starting Doom Patrol Radio was a show that, you know, first of all, the show even existing, the TV show being a thing from the beginning was like such a blindsided hit.
It just fell in our lap, to be honest with you.
We were already talking about it. We were already like just constantly.
It was weird how much conversation Mark and I would have about Doom Patrol, because this is just us, you know, going back and revisiting Morrison's run or Gerard Way's run, all these things where him and I are just passing books back and forth. And we would text each other. This is cool. Yeah.
Yeah. We would text each other panels and be like, oh, like, check out this moment, or like
just anything. Like, we would send
these quotes back and forth to each other that the characters were saying. And what was also weird was music. Mm-hmm. And art was such a big part of our kind of renaissance of Doom Patrol, that we were sharing music, and like what we thought the music would be for the show was the same type of music that people were sharing online. And
yeah, like even before all the show or anything, there's this, like, we found a Spotify playlist of just music that you should be playing while reading the book.
Yeah.
And we were just like, oh my gosh, this is perfect.
This is exactly what I had in my head. Like, that's the kind, and like, that's the kind of music I would listen to while I was reading it. And so there really was like this weird timing where it was like we were having our own little personal renaissance, and then
all of a sudden the show was like, oh hey, there's a show about it.
Yeah. And then one day Jeff Johns just posted a photo of Titans episode 4 Doom Patrol, and it was like what? it was just super crazy. So we said to each other as we were just wrapping up Dawn of Justice Minute, our DC Cinematic podcast second season, and we basically said, hey, we have to do this, because the consensus was that and it might sound a little bit selfish, but we said to ourselves, like, I would be very disappointed if this show premiered and went on and did its whole thing and we weren't the ones talking about it, and like we would be having this conversation anyways.
Yeah,
we might as well be doing a podcast about it. So we literally were like, we have to do this. We owe it to ourselves to do it, because we love it so much and we have so many things that we want to talk about. Whether it was good or bad, we said we would do it. We would be the ones to do a podcast about it.
I got it. So you guys basically had a private podcast that was already happening, and the show coming just meant that there might be other people that would listen to it.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. We were, I mean, even at that point, it was just the idea of the show wasn't even a fleshed out idea. It was just like, hey, we have microphones, we're doing this anyway, let's just record and talk about it.
Yeah.
And like, we were thinking the same thing about, we were going to take it like a minute by minute process, but
yeah. And that's how it started. It started out like, we should be doing a podcast about it because we have so much input about Doom Patrol and so much love and passion for it. And that's how it started out. And then as we started to think about doing this podcast, we started to think about that we didn't want to just be podcast people that picked up microphones, hit record, and said, hey, listen to our opinions about Doom Patrol. We didn't want to be that, I guess, like, half-assed about it.
Or just black and white talk show kind of thing.
And like, and we kind of kept thinking, like, we need to do this right, in a sense, where we wanted people who found our show to listen to the show and say, like, these guys carry the same energy that I get from the show. And so Doom Patrol Radio, like, Nate and I would get like dinner together, we would go out and like talk it out, like what our artwork was going to look like, what our intros and outros were going to start like. So we kind of came up with this concept that there, you know, just like in Doom Patrol, there's like these multi dimensions or layers of reality. Like Doom Patrol Radio, this podcast, would be somehow in universe, but somehow multi-dimensional, so it could exist in like this realm. And so we thought about like this radio that you would go into a painting to listen to the radio, and we wanted the show to be influenced by what influenced Doom Patrol. And Grant Morrison was influenced by surrealism and art and music, and we said we wanted to do the same thing. So we, you know, Nate has been, I said, you want to do a character? And so he did like this radio DJ, and we put music and all these kind of like this radio that as you change a channel, it was changing dimension. And then somehow it ended upon us talking about this show.
Yeah.
And it just became this whole thing that we were like, we wanted to carry that same energy.
And I really hope there's a second season so that we can hear Mark's character.
I can't do what Nate does. It's on. We after we record our episode, you know, we spend like an hour, maybe 2 hours, to talk about a 1 hour episode, and then it's another hour of us, you know, working with Nate to do this character and how we're gonna do it.
So crazy. I kind of have this like running interaction with the DJ character on your show because he always kind of introduces Doom Patrol Radio and. It's usually like the end of the paragraph. And so I'm always just sort of assuming that it'll like go down. It'll be like Doom Patrol Radio. And it never is. It's always like Doom Patrol Radio, like in the middle instead of going down. And I noticed it early on. I was like, oh, that's interesting. He like stayed middle, which is totally like in the spirit of Doom Patrol. It's like just a little wacky or unexpected. Mm-hmm. And then now it's this thing every time I'm listening, I'm like, is he going to end middle? And you like almost always ends like right in the middle instead of going down. Mm-hmm. So that's my little thing that you have no idea, but I'm just listening to you and thinking about that stuff.
Yeah.
But let's go. I'm going to give a spoiler warning just so people know this. We've seen the season. We're going to talk about stuff. I just first want to, well, you know, as we get into the content of the show, we've said that we love it, but like, just talk a little bit about what this season has meant to you, how you've reacted to it kind of as a fan.
I think what's important about what the show did so right and why I love it so much is they took these characters and they made it so that most of the people who are watching this show, this is probably their first exposure to Doom Patrol. And I think they really execute it well, where people come in for the first time, this is the first time experience it, and not only do they get the characters, but they end up loving each and every one as they progress progressively, like for the better. Like none of them has like a dark moment where you just go, man, they're, you know, I've seen some TV shows where it's like in their first season they'll introduce like one of the main characters of the cast and it'll be like, this is a character you're gonna hate, and then maybe like three seasons later you'll be like, oh, now they're a character I've really become emotionally attached to. This show starts off with, like, here are the characters. They have really bad lives. Try not to curse. They have really bad lives, and, like, they're kind of, in a weird way, atoning for their sins. Is that the phrase? Yeah. And it's like, that's what this show has done so well, is, like, these people come in for the first time. There's a first exposure to Doom Patrol. Here are the characters, and they learn them so well and for the better in a way that they relate to.
Yeah, it was really, it took me by surprise with how they fleshed out these characters. That coming from me, reading the book and reading the speech bubbles and looking at the panels and just seeing how the characters interact on page is not the same thing that you get when you watch a live action television show. And I feel that what Doom Patrol did in a sense was kind of have a little like a division in show versus you know, TV thing. But what really ultimately is what I'm trying to say is that, tagging on to what Mark said, the character development throughout the entire series is something that is a lot more visible and tangible when you're watching the show versus reading the book, at least from me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you can get all this information about the characters. Yeah, you can feel for them. Yeah, you can, you know, relate to everything that they're going through, if that's your fancy. But when you see it as an actor portrayal, it puts a little bit of a different spin to it, because then you have, you know, facial expressions or lack of facial expressions. You have stage direction. You have all these things that incorporate into the character that really develop it more so than just what is on a 2D page.
Yeah, I think we talked about that towards the end of the season finale. We talked about how this show, in a lot of ways, did things better than the books did, as mm-hmm. far as like you really connecting with these characters and really going on these like these downtrodden burdens that they created in their lives. And sometimes in the books it is more so like, hey, we got the, you know, we got the Negative Man, we got the Robot Man, we got, you know, Crazy Jane, we're gonna throw them into a wacky adventure, and at some point they might have a panel where they go, oh, my life is terrible. And it's like, this show would have an episode for one character and just be like, we're just going to focus on how bad this character's life is and then come out for the better. And then by the end of the season, it's like all these characters that you've grown with, their pain was caused by said person. Mm-hmm. And it's like, then you learn that person. And it's like, there's something that the show did a lot better as far as character development that sometimes you might not get from the books if you're just reading like one issue or four issues and you're not reading like the whole.
Or even if you're just reading a particular arc, because a lot of times they just kind of throw you into a dilemma that the team has to go through, and they solve it as a whole team instead of going through their individual trials and tribulations or whatever they have to go through. So a lot of times it's really something like a television show based off of like a team aesthetic from a book can really pinpoint exact defining characteristics of said characters.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I just to add on to the character stuff that you guys are talking about, I mean, I've been really impressed with how evenly they developed all the characters, because usually when you have this complex of a cast, yeah, a couple of them kind of rise to the top, or they become the fan favorites, or they become the writer's favorites, and they're like, oh, I just like these characters better, so I'm really going to give them a lot more, you know, stuff to deal with and go through. But, like, the core team, to me, it was very, very, like, even, like, how they all got they got personal moments, they all got kind of down, sad moments, they all got, like, lifting up sort of moments, they had moments, like, paired off with each other. And, like, if you kind of just mapped it out, like, proportionally, everybody got a really good, like, fair shake of development and, you know, a chance for the audience to connect with them and that sort of thing, which to me is really amazing. And for a while in the middle of the season, I thought that, like, Niles Calder and maybe, like, even the overall villain, Mr. Nobody, I thought they might have been getting a little bit shorter shrift in favor of, like, the main four or five. But then by the end of the season, they come around, too. Like, we get some really deep, like, Niles Calder stuff in the last couple episodes. We get some really good Mr. Nobody stuff in, like, the last three episodes. So then by the end, I'm like, oh, man, like, they're, like, seven deep doing a really good job of handling that big of a cast.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think one of the great things they did with Alan Tudyk's Mr. Nobody is they kind of, in the very beginning of the season, they were like, here's Alan Tudyk being this phenomenal character. And then they deprived us of it. Mm-hmm. And then when they bring him back towards the end of the season, it's like, this is what you've been kind
here's
of...
Here's the showman.
Like, here's what you've been missing and you've been kind of wanting. And I think it's towards... I think it's Cyborg Patrol when they're in the ant farm. And he shows up at the very end. It's almost like, oh, crap, we forgot about how bad this dude is. Like, how evil he is. And when he shows up at the end of that episode, it's like, it's like, oh, we slept on this. Yeah. Like, and it bites us and it really hurts.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It really just goes back to how fantastic the writers just tackled this entire show, especially with what you said, Sam, with how they're all just evenly distributed as character development. Mm-hmm. I mean, thinking back about it, it really is mind blowing at how delicate and, you know, just thought out this entire process was that these writers had to go through, and with the allotted episodes that they had covering everything. It's just, it's really crazy, especially when you look at like Titans, where it, from at least our opinion, fell short in multiple ways, but character development could very well be one of them. And that just wasn't an issue when you look at Doom Patrol. It just wasn't.
I don't want to talk too much about Titans, but I will say that, like, my favorite episodes of Titans were the two Hawk and Dove episodes
that had the most character development.
Yes,
Mark.
And then it wasn't really them. And even so, like, if it was those two, and then my third favorite would, if I had to do a top three, would just have been the Doom Patrol one, because we got to learn about them. So it's like, when you think about it as the Titans show, my favorite episodes have nothing to do with them. That might be a problem.
But it just, I mean, yeah, just going off, like, different properties, different writers, different groups, different everybody between the two shows. Mm-hmm. But the fact that Doom Patrol took this formula, almost seemingly perfect formula, and just ran with it, it's just mind-blowing.
Yeah, because you have these episodes, you know, you have Doom Patrol, which is like a Rita Farr episode, and you have Danny Patrol, which is a Negative Man episode, and then what's the Driver 8 Patrol? Jane Patrol. And that was all about Crazy Jane. And so you had these episodes that were just, like, we're just going to focus on their trauma. And at the same time, we're moving forward on the board towards, like, the whole season's point, which is just... how do we defeat Mr. Nobody and get Niles Calder back and be one big messed up family again? Like, it was weird how much it worked, where it was like, we're gonna work on these characters, but it'll also help the whole story progress. So it was very just, you know, executed like very strangely perfectly.
I want to dig into a few of the specific things from the season that like really stood out to you as like positive moments, positive parts of episodes or whatever. But I first want to start with like a highlight for me, but it's not a specific moment. It's kind of going throughout the whole season. But I just I kind of, you know, really grew to attach to all the characters, and I like the way that they interact and everything.
Mm-hmm.
But Larry Traynor was a real highlight for me, Negative Man, and his, you know, relationship with the Negative Force, or, you know, being inside of himself. And something about like the character design with the wrap around his face and the even just the body language of how the body, you know, actor carried it out. Like, I just liked his story. I liked his performance. I like the voice, you know, of Matt Bomer or whatever. Is that his name?
Yes.
That does the voice. Yeah. So like Matt Bomer, like the way he says words, even just he's become now like one of my favorite comic book characters and mainly from this show.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's Nate's favorite character for a very long time.
Yeah. I definitely was more drawn towards Negative Man, especially starting out in the comic book series. Just because he's so cool.
He's
cool. I mean,
cool
like
looking.
He's just cool sunglasses, cool coat, cool bandages.
Mm-hmm.
Dude has crazy negative spirit come out of him and just destroys things. He's just a cool guy, but he's just incredibly broken. And I mean, taking that fact and looking at the character alone, just like this dude wrapped up by bandages, the only thing that keeping him together and keeping him inside this thing is just the will to just try to be cohesive with this negative spirit. Anyway, just completely broken man.
Yeah.
But Matt Bomer and the other Matt that did the body and the bandages, I think portrayed this character of Negative Man almost perfectly. There's I say almost just because I can't think of anything bad right now, but I'm sure there is something that I can be like, okay, that's a check mark. Anyway, it was so perfect from what my idea of how the character interacted with the group members, how he talked, how his body language was, just everything about it was almost like too perfect, where it's just like, okay, how did you understand that this is how a guy wrapped up in bandages is? Have you watched a lot of Hollow Man or something? Because you guys are blowing my mind right now.
Yeah.
Kevin Bacon doesn't have anything on Matt Bomer.
Even to the voice.
Kevin Bacon was in Hollow Man, right?
Yes, he was. Yes. And we, you know, you read these comic books, and we talked about this on the show, but it's like you'll read a comic book and you kind of put a voice to the characters, and it's strange hearing that voice in real life and going, oh, that's a voice I had in my head this whole time.
Yeah.
It's really weird how you captured that. And it was the same thing for Cliff Steele, where, you know, you would hear Brendan Fraser talk, or Mr. Nobody as Alan Tudyk as Mr. Nobody. And it was like, these voices seem strangely like accurate to what was in my head. And they kind of got the same thing. So it was really weird hearing Matt Bomer do this Negative Man with this negative spirit,
yeah,
like in this kind of defeated attitude, and being like, wow, how did they know?
Yeah. But then you get to like a character like good segue for Mark, like Rita Farr and April Bowlby. From me personally, I don't have that much extensive knowledge on Elastigirl, Elastawoman, Rita Farr, and so like her character makeup is a little foreign to me. It isn't now with the help of the show, because what they did with April Bowlby and how she fleshed out her melodramatic attitude of just this washed up 1950s actress. And it's just like, I never got that, like that character that April Bowlby plays as Elastawoman was nothing what how I imagined how she was in the older comic run.
Yes.
And that's something that's like, one, a brilliant creative decision, I think, and two, it just makes me like it fit. It made it seem almost perfect, where it's like, yeah, I can tell that this girl, this woman playing this actress, this washed up actress, is exactly that, a washed up melodramatic woman who is just unhappy with the choices that she made in her life, and there's nothing that she can do to change it. And she's been living like this for 80 years, man.
And we absolutely love it.
Yeah.
Like, in the more, like, she was like April Bowlby's Rita Farr was the, you know, as we started seeing Doom Patrol in the Titans episode, and as we were, you know, anticipating the show, Rita Farr was a character that, just because of the comic books, we were just kind of like, okay, she's there. And but we really want to see like Cliff Steele. We want to see Crazy Jane. We want to see all this wacky stuff. And she ended up becoming my favorite character of this entire season. I absolutely fell in love with this character. Mm-hmm. I honestly believe that this Rita Farr is the best interpretation of the character so far. And I think this show is going to define that character from now on. When you see Rita Farr mm-hmm. in comic books, you will be seeing April Bowlby's Rita Farr in comic books now, because mm-hmm. I think she did such a fantastic job that I think that it's really going to define the character. But with Negative Man, that Danny Patrol episode, that yeah. really was his highlight of like character development. And he also had Francis Patrol, which is like I guess the other really great Negative Man. But it started with Danny Patrol, and it was honestly the first episode where Nate and I, like mid-episode, we had to take a breather. It was like, this is incredible, mm-hmm. like that this is a TV show and that it's doing so well. It was, there's such a heart-stopping moment in that episode, like halfway through, that it was just, I guess, traumatic for us as well.
Yeah. What are some other moments that had really stood out to you? One for me that I was really, like, in retrospect, I really appreciated a lot was the donkey and how the donkey, you know, has, like, the vortex or portal inside of it and Donkey Patrol and stuff
mm-hmm.
For the town of Cloverton, like, getting basically absorbed in and then spit back out. The reason I think that's, like, a key moment is because it sets the tone early on in the season that, like, hey, you have to just be ready for anything. You have to be ready for the surreal, wacky kind of stuff that's going to go on. You have to roll with it. And so by having a donkey swallow a town, they're letting you know, get on board, because we're going to take you through a journey this season.
Yeah. And that was even in the first episode. And I remember Mark and I like watching that first episode and being like, all right,
we're
on the right track. This is if that's the first episode, what are we going to expect for the rest of the season?
Yeah.
And yeah, that was definitely something, I mean, and that's a choice on a creative point of view to put something like that in the first episode to get your audience on board. And mm-hmm. I think it worked. I mean, if there were people that turned off the show because that was a little too wacky, hey, you're probably in the right. Yeah, that's
you're not wrong for admitting it's weird.
Exactly. But there was like some other things that I personally liked throughout the series, and it was really not just like not really like instances or battles or anything like that, but it was like the smaller things, like the Rita Farr and Larry Traynor relationship that they have as these two homebodies that have lived together for 70 years
mm-hmm.
and they're just like platonic friends that love each other so much and are just on the same exact page. That was something that I would never have thought that could be brought or could be taken away from the show. It's something that I could never have imagined that the two characters had. And it wasn't just them. I mean, like, you had, like, the Cliff and Jane relationship, but that's something that was a little bit seen in the comic books.
Mm-hmm.
And the Victor and Niles Calder relationship was kind of something, you know, that was definitely new. But it was really the Rita Farr and the Larry Traynor things that were just, like, these people belong together. They're here. This is what, like, heart of the team. You guys are doing it. It's just one extra piece of the puzzle that fits the entire page to make up the big happy family of Doom Patrol.
Yeah, and we talked about that too on the show, where it's like it started out that way, where it was like the Larry Rita mm-hmm. show, and they were like doing their thing together. And as the show went on, it deprived us of that, but that's because, you know, you want to do other combinations. Like, you want to have like your Rita Cliff moment in Florida, or like you want to have like a Cyborg Crazy Jane episode. Mm-hmm. And then by the end of the season, they were like, okay, let's bring back that Larry and Rita are still like this kind of like, they're our superhero version of like Will and Grace. It's like, I was like so here for it. And so it was just fantastic to always see them.
Mm-hmm.
One of the cool things about that donkey showing up in the first episode is, again, what they do so well with writing is they make it a big deal that this donkey just did something really incredibly weird. And so Cliff Steele the entire time is just going, you know, WTF, WTF, like I can't believe this. And then by the end of the season, it's like, of course I'm going in the painting. Like, I'm so desensitized to it all. And so it's that kind of progression that we go, this is really weird. And then it's like,
it's also a theme that's taken from the book. I mean, like, you got a point. It gets to a point where they're like, yeah, all right, there's the Paris is in a painting. I guess we're going in.
Yeah, I guess we're going to go in this painting.
Call the Justice League. I don't really know what to do, but we're going in here. Mm-hmm. Like, it's that whole fleshed out, you know, everything came into a circle pretty much.
Yeah.
And it was really good.
Mm-hmm.
One thing that was a highlight, or it became a highlight for me by the end, was actually Cyborg's presence on the show. So, like, Cyborg is a character that I really like from the comic books, and I liked in Justice League and Ray Fisher's version, and I've liked the character just in several different incarnations for a while.
Mm-hmm.
When he came into the show, I wasn't, like, immediately impressed with the actor, Joyvon.
Is it Jovian Wade?
Jovian Wade.
I might be mispronouncing that, but...
Yeah, who's, you know, it might be that he's might be doing an American accent or whatever, because I know he's British or English.
Oh, is he really?
Yeah, according to Wikipedia, but just acting-wise, he was, like, at the beginning, he was, like, one of the ones where I felt like his acting was not quite up to the caliber of what everybody else was putting in,
mm-hmm.
and then I'm like, oh, no, like, I hope that this isn't, like, a mistake, or that he's, you know, doesn't fit, or whatever, but it became a highlight by the end of the season. By the end of the season, I was really glad that he was on the team. The stuff that he goes through with his father, he has just as intensive emotional scenes by the end as other people got to have.
Mm-hmm.
In their episodes. So, yeah, for me, that was a highlight that it turned out well. And I know you guys on your show, you talked about how he actually does make sense as a Doom Patrol member if you think mm-hmm. about, like, what Doom Patrol means.
Yeah. That was, like, a real strong realization that Mark and I had. Mm-hmm. And, it honestly just occurred to us when it was like, oh, he actually fits on this team.
Yeah, more so than
Garth, I guess.
No, more so than Teen Titans a little bit, or even Justice League.
Oh, more so than him on the Teen Titans. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. He would be, like, I mean, maybe that's a thing.
Wait, you might be right about he fits in more than Beast Boy does, because...
Yeah, and then you get into the thing where it's like Beast Boy and Cyborg interchangeable between these two Doom Patrol and Teen Titans teams,
yeah.
And that's a weird conversation.
I can't wait for, and I hope they will, is have Jovian Wade Cyborg meet the Teen Titans
cool.
Titans, because they exist in the same kind of
cool.
shared universe.
But it was definitely a strong realization that we saw that Cyborg definitely fits on Doom Patrol more perfectly than the Teen Titans or even on Justice League. I mean, he belongs there.
Right, and you guys talk about it, like, in your show, like, to be on the Doom Patrol kind of means that, you know, you have an unfortunate accident and it gives you these powers, but they're kind of, like, you know, weird powers, and you're kind of grappling with them, and they kind of cause problems, and so that fits Cyborg. But the other part of Doom Patrol, as I'm learning, like I said, I don't really know all the lore as much, but what I'm learning from the show and hearing you guys talk about it is Doom Patrol also means that even before you had the accident, before you had the powers, you actually had some messed up stuff. You actually, like, were not as good as you maybe think you were in hindsight.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
that does fit for Vic, too, because Vic had some issues with his dad. Like, his dad was paying more attention to work than himself and that sort of dynamic.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe hiding some stuff from Vic of, like, what his dad is actually doing at work and stuff like that. So you kind of realize, like, oh, he had some, you know, problems that he needed to work through with his dad even before the accident. And the accident just exacerbated it, because now you throw on top of it all of the nanobites and his, you know, body changing and all that stuff. So, yeah, I agree with you guys. Like, that whole mess of things, issues to deal with, that's like a Doom Patrol mess.
Yeah, I'm so glad you brought up Cyborg, because that, I guess I forgot to say what my highlight of the show was. But, yeah, it definitely was Cyborg as well, because us being able to talk about Cyborg, you know, everyone was apprehensive at first because, you know, we love Jovian Wade now, but we also still really love Ray Fisher. And there, you know, if you're a fan of DC and live action DC content, Ray Fisher's Cyborg was this big talking point, because we've all grown to love the heart of the Justice League, who is Cyborg. And so, like, going from Ray Fisher's Cyborg to Jovian Wade's Cyborg, some people felt a little hurt about it. They felt kind of burned that, you know, all this attention was on this show and this Cyborg, and you know, something simple as saying that this Cyborg was going to be using, you know, prosthetics instead of CGI, it caused more, you know, just garbage on your Twitter feed about people's opinions and stuff. So coming into it, there was this apprehension, this hesitation about what to think of this Cyborg. And even Nate and I were just constantly talking about, like, why did they bring him into the show? For what purpose? Not like because we didn't want him, we just didn't understand, you know, out of all the things Doom Patrol, this is the most out of left field writing decision. And it just made more and more sense as we continue to talk about it and as we continue to watch the show. And it made even more sense towards the end when they have Cyborg Patrol, that episode where it makes perfect sense that this Justice League-esque, you know, wannabe hero would try to stop someone like Mr. Nobody, and Mr. Nobody would be like, you guys just don't get it. I'm telling you not to mess with me, and I'm going to make you pay for it. And so he really cuts down this kind of AAA superhero. And it's the more that they go on with him, it's great. And then besides that, we also got to talk a lot about cyberization, cyberpunk genre stuff. Like, we got to really talk about this whole grid thing, which was, as soon as they mentioned grid, Nate and I were like, oh, this is bad news. Yeah, so yeah. It's great.
Yeah, I like what you guys said too about how Grid is kind of set up as a perfect villain for season two if we get a season two.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Grid is one of those things, like, you know, there's talk about a Cyborg film and stuff like that. Like, this concept of man versus machine, and especially now in this digital age that we're in with technology and how infused we are with technology, Cyborg is a ripe superhero for this moment, for where we are right now. And as we continue to go on in the future, it's going to be more and more, like, ripe for this, for the, you know, for a film or whatever you want to have, TV show episode. But it's like this Cyborg battling with this grid complex, it's a big deal, and I think I hope people are ready for it.
Yeah, so you're kind of touching on one of the themes of Doom Patrol, I think, which is like this issue of what's human, what's machine, and also this issue of, like, Niles Calder trying to, like, engineer and manufacture his way to immortality, and, like, people trying to kind of enhance themselves with powers. And, like, you have Fuctopia and stuff where their people are going to try to get powers. But then you can contrast that with people who are, like, don't necessarily want their powers, and it's like a curse, you know? So there's this whole issue of, like, are we trying to make ourselves better and more powerful with technology and with other advancements? But also, what are we opening up with that? Are we opening up some pain and trauma with that and stuff? So that's one of the themes that I see for sure. I wanted to give you guys a chance to talk about any other themes that you kind of saw across the show.
Well, to add on to that, I mean, it's another topic where it's like, I mean, you could be enhanced with cyborg parts, but you're still a garbage human, you know, like it doesn't change anything. Like, you can go from a nobody to a super powered nobody, but you are still a nobody. Mm-hmm. And so I think that was like,
or if you're a selfish, self-involved person, you can get, you know, some powers and you're still a selfish person with those powers.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It was just one of those things.
You got to work on your internal kind of morality and stuff like that.
Exactly.
And not just focus on your external powers.
Exactly. Which is something that you don't see in a Superman or Batman book, because, you know, they're already perfect characters that are so, you know, comfortable within themselves, as, you know, especially from a writer's standpoint, you got a formula for writing those characters. When it comes to Doom Patrol, they're almost like unstable substances. Like, it really can go either way when you get to these characters.
Yeah, and then I guess it also could be like, oh, you're not, if, I guess I'm not trying to, like, name superheroes, but it's like, it's not easy to flip that switch either. You can't just be like, oh, I'm not being the best I can be, I'm going to be the best person now in the third act. And it's like, I think people like Rita Farr were characters who were like, I'm not the greatest person. And they just kind of admit that and keep going. And they are like, we can try to change, but we have to accept that we are broken and that we are, I guess it's weird, but Suicide Squad did the same thing in their film where it was like, Diablo was a character who was like, I've done bad things and I know I'm paying for the things that I've done in my life. And he moved on. He was like, I'm going to try and do the right thing because I'm a bad person. And I like that concept more so than being, hey, you should, you know, with great power comes great responsibility. And it's like, oh, yeah. Okay.
Oh, yeah. Forgot about that.
And
got it.
Yeah. And it's that kind of thing where I'm like, I don't think it's that easy.
Yeah, it's true.
Yeah, and it comes around really well for the characters in, I think it's Penultimate Patrol, where they all kind of have to grapple with that fact that they were not good people before. They had, at least they had flaws before, but they've gone through this long process of starting to deal with it. So I think they wrapped up that theme across several characters really well near the end of the season. Another theme that stood out to me is a nice one that's kind of complementary to Titans, you know, because this is a spinoff of Titans. And so I like that there's a little bit of a thematic connection. So in the review that I did for Titans season one, I talked about how there's really a theme there of people dealing with an inner darkness. Like you have an inner darkness inside, and do you let it out, or how do you manage it, or what do you do? And I think Doom Patrol has a similar theme, but I would phrase it a little bit differently. I would say it's like, not how do you deal with your inner darkness, but it's like, how do you deal with your damage or the pain that you have inside? So it's not, you know, darkness like demons arising or urges or violence arising, but it's more like trauma that you've experienced or something. How do you deal with that? Or something that has not gone the way that you wanted to. So maybe it's like an unfulfilled dream or something like that. How do you deal with it? Like, how do you move on and still find a life and find maybe a little bit of happiness even with that?
Yeah. I really like the, I drew out a lot from like this season was the theme of like acceptance and belonging.
Yeah.
To a group of peers, but also just in the sense of just where you fit in this world. I mean, and look at like both Negative Man and Rita, like they're these, you know, seemingly immortal beings that have lived, you know, 70, 80 years with these powers and have just like kind of either hiding away or being super depressed and not really looking in the mirror and accepting the fact that, look, you're either cursed or you know, put a brave face on and get on with your day and live with it. But the theme of acceptance and everything, I mean, from this show and with the books of Doom Patrol, was something that I really focused on a lot with my reading. Because, I mean, yeah, you get back to it. It's like, oh, I'm a weird nerdy kid in school that likes comic books and video games and I don't have friends. Yeah, okay, that was me, but also, you know, not as stereotypical, but at least I was reading a book that, like, had these characters that had superpowers and still didn't feel accepted.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, that, I like that. You mean you're telling me that you have a negative spirit living in you that can come out and destroy things and you're a great superhero, but yet you don't feel like you belong anywhere? What is that? Yeah. And it's just like that, like, broken side of a hero is something that I really stuck onto, just for, like, with the hopes of seeing if they can overcome it or if they do feel acceptance with it themselves or in a larger group or anything like that, as if the world would see them or even if readers saw them and accepted who they were.
Yeah, loneliness is a big you know, thing that they all tackle. Even, you know, Cliff Steele could be, you know, typical high energy Cliff Steele of just being like, you know, let's get the band together and let's go on an adventure and stuff, but like at the end of the day, he's still this guy in a tin can who has
a brain.
He just stares out the window, or like he'll just he'll zone out in front of that food truck, and it's like, yeah, there's a bunch of people around you, but you are lonely. Like you are in that shell by yourself, and then Crazy Jane is the big one. Crazy Jane is the one who goes through something so traumatic that her brain has to split 64 times. The metagene superpower part, that's just for comic books. The multiple personality part, that's real. People go through what Crazy Jane went through, what Kay Chalice went through. That's hardcore stuff. And so knowing what was coming because we read the books, we knew, like, this is a big issue. We can't wait to for people to kind of experience it, because they also talk about it in the Hank and Dawn episode of Titans. But just things that Kate Chalice went through, and the reason that your brain would even have to split into multiple personalities just to protect you, like, mentally, like, it's, there's these things that Doom Patrol, they're all just born in damage and trauma. And the superhero parts, that's just for comic books, but it's real deal stuff, and I think that's why people really relate to them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm glad you brought up the outcast part, because that definitely is, I think, a purposeful theme. And like Danny the Street, like, that whole thing is also tying right into the theme of people that feel like they don't, you know, aren't accepted in other places, but then they find acceptance, and then that's so happy and joyous just for other people to welcome them in as they are. And then the Doom Patrol, you know, being outcasts in various ways, but then by the end they kind of find each other. And I like it too, because the, you know, the show, when it starts out, they're living together and they, like, know each other already, mm-hmm. Most of them. But they're basically just, like, cohabitating, you know, like, yes. they're together, and they have this connection to the chief, but they aren't really accepting and supporting and, like, loving one another. But by the end of the season, they've really opened up in, like, much more emotionally kind of rich ways. And so they've gone to me from, like, from living together and kind of knowing each other and, you know, okay, hi, to, like, oh no, we have a bond now. We've, like, been through stuff. We've learned about each other. We've connected with each other. And so to me, that's kind of the resolution of the theme, is that these people who are outcasts, they can accept and welcome one another, and that they can provide support to each other, even if parts of society still won't accept them.
Yeah, and I think one of the things they did so well in the show was that they had Cliff Steele kind of try to force that they would be a team, when it started with Cliff Steele being like, all right, me and Crazy Jane, we're partners. And it's like, no, you're not. And it was like, it went for like 8 episodes until like Jane Patrol. And then it was like, that's when, like, you know, at the core of her trauma is when she really saw that Cliff Steele was not going to stop trying to protect her.
Yeah, he was so persistent. Like, yeah. And that's endearing. Like, how he just didn't give up. He just said, I'm still the one who likes you. Like still kept coming back to wanting that relationship to happen. And eventually he cracked, you know, he cracked that door open enough that Jane could actually come through and the others could see that and stuff.
Yeah, and so that when we do get towards the end of the season and you do get a Cliff and Jane kind of moment where they are trying to help Flex Mentallo, mm-hmm. remember who he is, it's like
another highlight of the season.
Yes, oh, absolutely.
Big highlight.
We haven't even talked about
Flex. We could talk another hour about Flex.
You want to have just an episode about Flex Mentallo? Let's do it. If you haven't watched the show yet, just watch it for Flex Mentallo. But that was something we kept talking about. Like, we can't wait to talk about him. But yeah, once you got to see Cliff and Jane working together towards the end of the season, it was an earned relationship. And I think that's what they did so well, is they said, you think it's going to be just handed to you, but these characters are going to work for that relationship. They're going to work for that family thing that you really want to see in these team-ups. And I think that was really important that they did that.
Yeah. Good stuff. Well, we could, yeah, like you're saying, we could talk a lot more about this, and you guys have talked a lot more about it. So I'll let you go ahead and give some more plugs for people if they do want to hear some more Doom Patrol content. Where should they look for that?
Yeah, we are on all podcast searchable things that they have.
Wherever you listen to
your podcast, Doom Patrol Radio. That's Doom Patrol Radio.
RADIO.
Why? Are you...
I don't know. You need me to spell it for you?
No, we got that. That's Doom Patrol Radio.
It's the one with the weird painting.
Yeah, the weird painting and everything like that. TwoOldMedia.com, social media, @Radio Doom Patrol.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and then we have a Facebook group, the DC Cinematic Minute Listener Society, where you can join us to talk about Doom Patrol. You can join us to talk about anything DC really you want to talk to us about. We do another podcast, DC Cinematic Minute, where we talk about the DC films. You can join us there. You can talk about those movies, or if you want
to
talk about...
I wanted to ask you guys, are you planning to do Wonder Woman? Because I know you're basically, like, wrapped up Suicide Squad.
That's next.
Yeah, we're doing Wonder Woman.
So you are? All right. You guys are going strong.
Yes, we are. Yes, it hasn't stopped yet. And hopefully Wonder Woman, that whole adventure that gives us time for Justice League to do whatever it's doing. And, you know, we're just, it's on the back burner for that one. But Wonder Woman is coming up next. We would love to talk about it. Swamp Thing is up now. And so anyone who wants to join us and talk about Swamp Thing, you can join us there. I think a lot of people asked us to do episodes on our Doom Patrol about Swamp Thing, but we just don't want to, I guess, like, limp into a situation like that. And, like, we have all this passion for Doom Patrol, and it's like, come join us on the Facebook group. We'll talk about it there, but I don't know if Nate and I are going to be,
like, I don't, we're not going to be putting out episodes for
Nate's,
Swamp Thing.
Nate's now. DJ is on vacation now. So.
Yeah, sure.
All right. Well, Mark and Nathan, thanks so much for coming on and talking. I really enjoyed kind of digging into Doom Patrol stuff with you guys.
Thank you so much for inviting us.
Yeah, really. Thank you. I mean, we can always talk about this.
Hey, let's please do.